Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're back in the Reality Check Radio House with Greenwashed and Don and Jaspreet. And earlier this year, we had Hamish Bielski on, and he and his wife have written some very interesting blogs. And just recently, we had part two of that come to our notice, in fact, on July 26. And there's a few paragraphs in there that made me sit up and think, oh, this is pretty interesting stuff, as was part one. And it said, what we found just below the surface, in reference to our research down on the farm, what we found just below the surface are giant-sized egos, division, bias, everything except what we naively thought we should find. Now, to flesh that out a bit more, we've got Hamish Bielski back on the line. And Hamish, what was it that you found? You're actually on mute still. Yeah, good. We've got you off mute. Fantastic. What was it that you found, Hamish?
We just found the depth of, it's hard to even just put a word on it without being mean, I guess lack of integrity or connections to everybody and every company. The tentacles behind all the scenes is just so massive. So, for instance, in beef and lamb, if there's a research project you want to do, if you add on methane science or research, then it gets approved. And so now we have scientists that are all pushing this narrative that used to be amazing research work with the breeders, like lamb survival, condition score research, facial eczema, parasite resistance, and so much was actual collaboration where we just really enjoyed working with these scientists to get to improve our bottom lines and to have more productive sheep was ultimately what it was all about. But now we hear these same scientists telling us how bad methane is. And so what they're saying is, we're saying, well, if we look at GWP star, for instance, which a long period of time, methane has just such a negligible impact. Why are we investing in this? Well, their reply is, well, over the short term, if you drop methane out of the atmosphere, its impact is huge. So it's even more imperative that we take it out. And I'm just like, you're now justifying your existence and this funnel of funds that just comes pouring at you. And no one when these funds come at them will ever question it because they're out of a job. And so when Amy was with a genetics company, she saw a lot of what was going on behind the scenes and almost the pressure on breeders to uptake this research, so like the methane, you put your rams into a methane trailer and the whole, I mean, that's such a massive job. It's a big effort for the farmer to even stick to the protocols to get them to that stage. And yet the big push was, in the future, if you're not doing this, you may struggle to sell rams. So all these breeders, out of fear, then comply. And I guess what we're seeing is we can't stop this funding, we can't stop this narrative, but as people, as breeders, as farmers, what we see is the only way we can stop any of this is by not being involved. So if we just say no, so if all the breeders just said, no, we're not going to participate in the research, then it falls over pretty much instantly. And after all the strategies I've had a look to see and try and work out how we combat this onslaught of ideology, the only way is that each individual person just says no to whatever they try and make us comply to, or as you say, Don, collaborate. The word collaborate is this gentle persuasion or gentle coercion attached to fear, which if you don't do it, you just may not be able to sell rams in the future. And that's all it takes. But if we all said no, then we'll all be selling rams in the future.
I like how you describe it, Hamish, funnel of funding. I can, you know, and what is going to come out of that is green. That's all that comes out. But all that you've said just now is very nicely encapsulated in this paper dated earlier, end of April, on the DPMC, the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet website, where it says that beef and lamb New Zealand is now, for sheep, they're estimating the genomic breeding values for the low methane emissions trait. And going on, so beef and lamb's obviously got funding there. So, yep, there's no more jobs. There is more time for collaboration. And then towards the end, the fine print of it says, in the barriers, they say, the most significant barrier is the cost of methane monitoring equipment, such as enclosed chambers and wearable methane monitors, which means that trials are conducted on a relatively small number of elements of animals. So we can't really get that accurate. We can't get a big enough study for the very methane that we are trying to quantify. But then they go on to say, however, as genetic markers are identified, breeding to reduce methane emissions can be carried out without the need to monitor every animal. Is this science? Is this truly science? I mean, they are themselves admitting the sample size is small. And why do they have a lack of funds for wearable methane monitors? The way I have seen what I have read, there's hundreds of millions of dollars here that's been given. Come on, splash out some more. It's ridiculous.
Where does it end? And this is why they're so desperate for breeders to test their animals in these trailers, because the investment has been huge, and you've got to get somehow, because it's ag research, you've got to get a return on investment. And you've got to get a return on investment to solve this problem that, in my opinion and many others, just doesn't exist.
Yeah, and we've had that quantified. Now, for our listeners here, Hamish, let's put it into perspective. What is the size of the warming here, Don? 1 millionth? Is it 1/4 millionth of a degree of global warming that has been caused by the New Zealand ruminants? How big is this problem that we're trying to solve here?
I think it's 4 millionth of 1 degree.
Oh my God! Which thermometer measures that?
But again, it's all on modelling. You might as well say nothing. You might as well say there is no effect. And I mean, I still can't get my head around the actual, you know, the science of how methane works is just so simple, and you know, all it is just a carbon extracted from the pasture they've eaten. They can't create anymore. It's just a hydrogen attached to a carbon atom. I think it's, you know, it was at 4 hydrogen atoms.
CH4, yep.
Like, it's energy. It's actually an amazing thing that allows the ruminants to break down the lignin that otherwise would blow their stomachs up with the gases. So what an amazing process. Here we are trying to distract us from, I don't know, the major issues that's going on in the world, which I don't really, I mean.
And it is the same thing that they're going to push every time. As dairy farmers, what we've heard is the markets want it. You're soon going to hear it as dry stock farmers, aren't you? The markets want low methane meat.
The markets don't want it. It's the corporates that want it. It's the corporates that want to make their ESG scores look good. Because how can Nestle tell New Zealand farmers that they need to do better and they're actually going to fall behind these barn-raised diesel-intensive operations in Europe and America, and then sell Kit Kats and Quick and somehow claim the higher moral ground on how they're improving human and planetary health. I mean, when you actually just start asking simple questions and stepping back and looking at it, the whole thing is the emperor with no clothes. They're all naked. We just have to keep calling out the fact that they're naked. And I mean, I just keep repeating the same things to you guys and to whoever else I talk to, because I'm still at a loss as to what else that we can actually do that's got any meaningful outcomes. You know, I won't get onto any board now because you just don't agree with what the narrative is. And so now that to get onto boards or to be a CEO or to be in management, you've got to comply to all this narrative. And so it self-perpetuates its own story and grows to be a big monster until one day, I guess, we do run out of energy or we do run out of good food. And that's when wars happen and suddenly no one cares about anything like that at all. And ultimately what Amy and I care about is that we're not destroying our soils on our farm, and we are wanting clean water to leave our farm. I sent the science leader at the ORC a video of me drinking the water out of my creek, saying sheep are not polluting our waterway. They hate water. And Paul Kenyon and at Massey's, they've got trials where they've got collars on sheep to see where they actually go around waterways.
Oh my God.
They it's showing their time around waterways is next to zero. So if there's E. coli getting into the waterway from sheep, it's after a heavy rain and it washes in, and I guess then it washes out. I mean, that's how our ecosystems have worked over millennia. We both struggle to fathom how much everybody has swallowed this. Like I say, when you look into it deeply and see the tentacles of follow the money, will lead you to your answers.
I remember, if it's any solace, Hamish, my last interview with the Dominion in 2011, I quoted that climate change was the greatest job scheme ever devised in the Western world. And I never added what I know now is there's more reef fish feeding it there at it than perhaps and investors looking for the pot of gold than I ever could have imagined. I thought I was basically speaking out of a hole in my head and sort of couldn't really justify it. And I'm no Nostradamus, but it just appears so valid today. And I've gone back to look for that headline, haven't found it yet, but at the time I felt, gee, that was the ultimate humiliation for me leaving Wellington, the way that Dominion presented it. But I think I feel vindicated today. I think,
Look, without a doubt, and just one other thing, you know, the general manager for Beef and Lamb Genetics is now part of a company that's just started up in June on I think it's a bolus or vaccine company for reducing methane in ruminants. This is the guy who's running our genetics team. So the conflict of interest is just, it just gets deeper and deeper. And so therefore, why would he question for farmers, on behalf of farmers, the reason for our, not just investment in money, millions of it, but our time? There's no reason to question it. In fact, you want there to be a problem. So if you want there to be a problem, you'll do everything you can to keep the gravy train running. It's just, it's never ending. And we've just got to keep calling these things out. And the fact that they can't even measure with a satellite methane in our atmosphere just makes me laugh. I'm like, so somehow we're 50% of New Zealand's emissions problem, yet they can't even detect it in the atmosphere. I mean, come on.
What was that? The whole thing we had over the last few years, you know, you have transmission without, there is, what was the whole thing around COVID, Don? I forget the narrative. Asymptomatic. It's all asymptomatic. Now that I get to it, these are trigger words for me, gentlemen. It's asymptomatic, all of this. And, you know, they keep saying we want the world healthier. And I don't know what you, the response you got from ORC, which is Otago Regional Council, for listeners, to your video. But I can say for one thing, regardless of where we are in the world, the previous generations, my grandparents' generations were but definitely far healthier than the generations we see today. And where were all these regulations and compliances at that point? I also see your regional council, Hamish, now has a climate change plan on which they're asking for submissions, the Otago Regional Councillors, ending 6th of October. And they have all these sort of goals which you can't quantify. The goal is Otago is a low emissions region and they deliver our community's expectations. How do you quantify this stuff? How do you measure this? It's, again, the same thing. A merry-go-round of jobs and collaboration.
It just astounds me. Like I was saying to you, the RRC in its wake has got a wilding pines problem. It's got an out-of-control pest problem. And up the Clutha River around Beaumont, the Blue Mountains, Old Man's Beard is out of control. And I'm like, that's a noxious weed. That's meant to be nailed as soon as you see a plant. Now it's just scattering through all their native bush. And where I'm from at Rangawahia in the Mungawai Riki Gorge, the whole gorge is full and smothered all the native bush. And all I can say is in 20 years' time, the native bush on the edge of the Clutha River will be a smothered mess. And this is all to the incompetence of the ORC, the Otago Regional Council. And here they are waffling on about climate change when actual real problems are not being addressed on the ground. But again, I guess those on-the-ground problems means people have to do stuff, and that's hard. And whereas talking around boardrooms and around councils, I guess, is the easy part. And when we're all clapping our way to this myopic utopian future. Meanwhile, farmers are actually really improving their management around winter cropping and a lot of things in farming has come massive.
Waffling on is right. Looking at ORC's page that say, what are we going to do? We are going to support and collaborate with the Zero Carbon Alliance and the Otago Climate Officers Group to understand shared emission reduction priorities, support Manawatu in climate change risk modeling, update the Otago Regional Council's natural hazards portal, participate in environment school programs, consolidate research on agriculture and food resilience in Otago region, including climate forecasting, soil moisture, and growing season predictions. How amazing it is. Nowhere do I see all of that, what you just spoke about.
So the farm that I'm on, since 1955, we've been gathering the rainfall data and giving it to NIWA. So I asked for all the data since 1955, and they gave it to me. My friend put it into a graph form through Excel. It's wonderful data. And there's just no pattern of rainfall statistics. It is very chaotic. It ranges from 1,000 millimetres down to, I think, 380, and the average is about 700, 750. Now, nothing's changed when you look at the graph. We get very dry years, we get some wet year, blah, blah, blah. But my point is, and then I look at another really good piece of research which says there's been no increased incidence in droughts in New Zealand. I can send you that research paper. But when I present that research paper to anybody, silence. I'm like, just have a discussion. But I guess when you start discussing all these topics, it gets really awkward quickly because suddenly you've got to have something to back yourself up. And ultimately, when I look at the Otago Regional Council on what they want, if you really want to reduce emissions, A, you've got to get rid of all our ruminants. Okay, so this is what they really want. And you've got to get rid of all your diesel and petrol cars. This is the funny thing I heard. They all come up with these ideas, as you say, collaborate, work together, but they never tell you what outcome they actually want. Because if you want to reduce emissions, that just means reduce diesel, petrol, coal, and ruminants. And so what are you left with? You're left with no people. You're left with a city that, I don't know, we end up starving because you've got no one to produce the food. Because if we want no diesel, you've got no harvesters, or you've got no ability to spread fertilizer. So you can't grow wheat and barley and all those sorts of crops. You can't grow arable crops. And to think you'll run them on batteries is just complete idiocy, like everything else that's happening at the moment. And then if we want everything electrified like they do, how are you going to actually generate enough power to run this utopian vision that they have? And then I talked to the guy who used to be the president of Fish and Game, I think. Is it a guy, Rodway? Morris Rodway.
Yeah, from mm-hmm. Southland, yep.
I asked him, what's the cost of net zero? He goes, oh, there's no cost. It's just if you reduce all your emissions, then everything's replaced at the same, you know. And I said, it's $550 billion, a report done by an engineer. Oh, no, that's just rubbish. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. No one looks at these reports.
No one looks at the fine print. Wow. What they're pushing is just for someone to say that there is no cost.
If it's any consolation, Hamish, he's the same guy that told me that at best the world can sustain 2 billion people and his preference was 1 billion. And he said it with a straight face. And
how long ago, Don, was that?
About 2015. It's what spooked me back into action that these people are crazy. That's why I'm back sort of doing this stuff, because I realized that there's a lot of people pushing those agendas. They were considered nothing to see here. Now it's in the clear light of day. It's all available for us to witness. And so, Hamish, good on you for fronting this stuff and telling people, because it is about telling the message, you and Amy, the way you do it. If we don't do that, we will get beaten. You do have to hopefully influence one person at a time, and slowly the tide will turn. And, we're running out of time, but we're just have to implore our listeners to go and read your blog. It's on Bassett, Brash and Hyde, but is there another address for that?
Oh, no, that's the only one I know of.
Right.
I think the Methane Science Accord Facebook page has a copy of it, but it will also be in the show notes of this one.
Methane Science Accord's got some really good data and articles on the website. It's a fantastic resource.
The recent edition you put out, the July 26th, is so salutary. I mean, only yesterday, in fact, just before recording the show, I actually said to myself, I better go and research a company called Ruminant Biotech. And even in the last 24 hours, the shareholding's been changed. So there's action afoot in the back of these entities, and you see the private investors getting involved. The taxpayers put up the coin to start with, and now they're slowly getting their IP taken over, commercialized by private investors. And you've got to ask, is that right? Is that fair? I mean, I see in that very issue, and I know I was going to wind up, but I'm just going to tell you what's happened. In the last 24 hours, the shareholding's changed, but 24% of Ruminant Biotech, and this is the company that's going to put the bolus out into the big wide world next year, and it's probably going to have a global spread for it, especially in South America, I would imagine, where it's going to have significant uptake. 24%. Mark Weldon, who I think was the former CEO of the stock exchange, has got 7%. Ralph Norris, who's a former Air New Zealand CEO, got 6%. There's other big names down that list, and you can go right down, believe it or not, to farmers that live in my province, with minority shareholdings. They might have two or three shares. Some are even listed as having no beneficial interest, but their name's on the owner's list. It makes your hair stand on end when you realize what's going on behind our back.
The gushing funnel of green, yep.
But what gives me confidence is that the whole alternative foods, synthetic foods, you know, a lot of that market's just falling over. So the investors are fleeing. Mm. And so in the end, truth always wins. But yeah, when you look back in history, I'm amazed at how long the truth takes to come out in some instances. So in the end, as I said to the beef and lamb guys at the meeting, I said, so how many farmers are actually going to put these boluses in? Because it only lasts for 100 days, so you need three boluses, so that's three times. Like the circus continues. I said, most farmers, 95% of them, just don't believe the climate change circus narrative. So they're not going to be putting boluses in just for what? So there's two ways. Either we're taxed into submission, or they pay us so well to put them in for public good that that we will do that. And even then, I don't think most farmers would do it. So
that would be tipping them in the back gully.
The other one was, yes, how many boluses are going to go into the environment, plastic, and how much diesel and energy was used in creating all these boluses and the transportation, like, yep, total clown world, but we'll just keep calling it out and understanding that I'm very, Amy and I are really focused at improving our ecosystems, doing what we can, and it's actually by planting trees, management, understanding soils and ecosystems better, we're having far more impact on the world around us than any council or government will ever be able to do. And if every farmer did that globally, then would and New Zealand's farming practices are, you know, in the world we live in, are pretty darn good.
Yeah, look, yeah. 100%, Hamish. And on that note, we're going to have to close. I'll just say that there's so many players now trying to get inside your farm fence, your farm gate, to try and take you back to pre-1985, where the government was just about everything to farmers. You needed the government inside your gate to help you and give you money. We don't, I hope you're standing up for, we need no government inside our farm gate. Happy to have biosecurity regimes at the border and managing all that. But yes, this overt attempt to get inside the farm gate again and be nice about it, is anything but nice. So look, Hamish, thank you for standing up for farmers the way you do, and Amy, it's great to have you back on RCR Greenwashed, and we want you to keep sort of coming back and giving your penny's worth on this, because it is people that put their minds to it and express it well that we need to hear from. So fantastic. Thanks for coming back on.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Hamish. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.